Ladies and gentlemen, we are here this week for episode 6 of the ACAD Arm Chair Arm Draggers. And folks, we got a special episode. We are going to be covering WrestleMania 8. It is me, the big guy, my PIC himself, Mr. Moneymaker. And we special guest hosts, not co-hosts, special guest hosts. This week, we got the man, Doc Savage, and the Samoa Bush himself.
Oh, yeah. I feel like I got arm dragged into a different universe. Let me tell you something. All you lucky, lucky listeners out there, you're going to experience something you never experienced before. Because while you hear my gravelly voice, you're also going to be touched upon by the smooth, velvety caress of my podcasting partner, the Samoan Bush. Yeah.
Hi.
I love him. Oh, that was great. That was great. Moneymaker, that's like me and you. I give a big, long intro, and then I leave it to you, and you're just like, hey.
Yep.
And they're not lying, because I'm the one who edits it, so I know for a fact. I'm like, give him some more, Moneymaker. Give him some more. And you
work that corner in. Yeah.
That's right. So are you guys ready for WrestleMania 8?
No.
Yes. Yes, I am. No. Because
the Hoosier Dome, baby.
The chaos that it becomes.
So we're gonna kick this show off, dive right into the very first match. And our first match of the night was El Matador, Tito Santana, and a very young Shawn Michaels with the sensational Sherry.
Oh boy.
What a thrill this was.
I don't know if it's safe to say I have thoughts. I don't know if it's safe to say I have feelings.
Oh, come on. This was a good one.
Going to hate how I have graded these by your arm drag scale. You are going to hate me.
I won't go first. I'll let our host go first, because I'm going to show what it's like to be a real heel. And so I'd rather not go first.
If you want to do a compliment sandwich, wherever you want the most aggressive take, that's where you throw me. So you just tell me.
Follow whatever has the retro sunset.
No one's going to see our backgrounds, Push. You and I are just living with 80s backgrounds.
So we'll go with big guy to myself, to Doc, and we'll leave Push for last on this one.
Yeah, well, that's fine. The fans out there listening, we're going to do this a little different. I know you're used to me and Moneymaker running down step for step for the match and talk about key points. It's going to be a little different because we do have more hosts with us this week.
Oh, don't worry. I'm going to go step for step on some of these. Yeah.
So, I mean, we're going to start off with this match, and Tito starts this match off fast. I mean, he took an early, quick control. And after that is where I don't know how many dragging headlocks you can do in a match, but I think if you watch this match with the rest of wrestling, I think Tito might have the record for the most
rolling headlocks
done in a match in this match. it was the big guy was losing interest quick.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
See,
absolutely.
I looked at this as a level up match for Shawn Michaels, because he was early in his singles run here. He needed a name win. That's what this was. Was it a great match? No. But it was one of Shawn Michaels' first singles matches. Mm-hmm. And Tito Santana blew him up. And you know, Shawn got the win. Sherry was looking great. Sherry looked great. But I gave it a 1.
Oh, we're just jumping into grades willy-nilly?
Not all willy-nilly. So after we got through the rolling headlock capades, let's talk about the botched ending. What was that?
Not even Gorilla Monsoon knew what that was.
What was that?
And it was
that?
So bad that when Bobby Heenan asked for the replay, Gorilla's like, no, we're not going to go to a replay, because he knew it was just shit.
I had to rewind it and watch it a few times to see what was this supposed to be. I don't know.
I don't think they knew.
I don't know.
No one knew.
No one knew. And then, listen, okay, allow me to just jump in here.
You go ahead.
I have thoughts. And the first thing that listeners got to know about WrestleMania 8 is this card, first off, starts with the most egregious use of green screen, where you have Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan sitting in front of a green screen, and it's so blatant. And Bobby's like looking up, like, oh, where is everything? And Gorilla's like, what are you looking at? He's like, I'm looking at the people. And it's just like, okay, guys, I love the effort here. The reason why I reference the announcers is they're the ones who carry this match.
Yes, you are 100%
the
correct.
The comedy tandem, the back and forth between Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan made this match not an eye roller for me. Now, here's the thing. Moneymaker says that this is a level up match for Shawn Michaels. This is the sacrifice of Tito Santana. Vince McMahon has said, I'm going to carry you up the mountain, Tito, and I'm going to sacrifice you to the God that I worship known as Shawn Michaels, you know, the my man crush. First off, El Matador. This is Vince's whole thing. Jim Cornette says it on his podcast all the time. This was the era where everyone needed to have a job. My wrestlers need to have a job other than just being wrestlers. Yeah. And Tito Santana, I now have to believe, after being in Strikeforce and being a great Intercontinental Champion, just decided to become a bullfighter. He's the Matador, and he's wearing the most egregious neon and pink. I actually think John Cena is a big-time El Matador fan, because all those colors Tito's wearing ended up on John Cena shirts. Okay,
you're not wrong.
And this match... big guy, I love the fact that you reference the headlocks. This is a textbook match. Ooh. This is a let's not F things up type of match. And yet they did. Look, certain clotheslines. By the way, this is the card where clotheslines did not land appropriately. People got clubbed in the head at the wrong angles, and it's riddled through the entire card. I don't know what the hell's going on. When we get to the tag team match between the Natural Disasters and Money Inc., I'm going to talk about the most egregious clothesline bump I've ever seen. But this match was no different. Mm-hmm. It was the ebbs and flows of, look, this match is the story of Tito's a grappler, Sean's the striker. Sean's shoving, he's throwing punches. Tito is like, you know what, kid, I'm going to just calm you the hell down. This match tried to do something with Sean. There's no real payoff to it, though.
None.
Other than Sean gets a win over somebody who will one day be called a Hall of Famer. And I'm just going to go straight to my finish. This is a one-arm drag for me, guys. This is a one-arm drag, and only because it is not insulting to the profession of pro wrestling. That's my grading scale. If you don't insult wrestling, you're going to get at least a one. And that's what this got from me.
Okay, my turn. I'm going to open up with thank God Shawn Michaels developed an addiction, because we would have never gotten that second great run that he got into. What took place there? I was looking at this, and it's ironic because, it's a coincidence, because prior to us coming on here, we spoke about how like Shawn Michaels' second run was the best run. And I'm watching this and I'm like, why the fuck did he even have a first run? Where the hell did he even get the title from? Like, there's a bump where he gets hit, where he doesn't know whether he's supposed to go through the bottom rope or above the bottom rope, and just kind of like just slides out of there like a child going off a slide backwards. So I'm just like, okay, you clearly gave up, and I'm okay with that. That's fine. And then, oh my God, like I feel like I was watching a Roman Reigns versus Randy Orton house show where they were just doing headlocks, like, no boy, we got 7 minutes to burn. We're gonna burn them, goddamn it. The guy said so. And maybe Sean was like, no, we gotta go some action. And he was like, nope, Vince said seven, we're going seven. And then that weird thing happened where they tried saying like Tito hit his head. Where did he hit his head? I don't know where the fuck he hit his head anywhere. Sherry was just standing there existing in the Netherverse, and I if I have to give it a score, I'll give it a one. not by
you
far.
You can give it a zero.
Okay, then it's a zero. I give it a zero because that shit was fucking painful. That
was, shit.
Which hurts because then WWE, for some reason, is now known for having some of the best introduction matches when it comes to Mania, whether you have like, what was it, Rollins, Balor versus Miz as an opener. Like they do really well with openers, but this one was, it should have been pre-show. 100%.
Yeah, but okay, spoiler alert, you and I talked about it on the episode we just recorded. The opener being a great match didn't really start until Owen versus Brett, which doesn't happen for another 2 years.
To be fair to this match, all right, if you put this match on paper, now we've all watched it and we all know what it is, but if you were to sit here and look at this match before watching the card, you would have thought this would have been a good match.
If you're telling me that it's Tito Santana minus El Matador, like if you're telling me the former IC champ who's a vet, who's a former successful tag team champion is going up against Sean, I'd buy it. But this Tito, it's not his own fault. He's made to look like a goon. Even how he lost makes him look like a goon. I think the way that spot was supposed to go, I think Sean was supposed to struggle and maybe poke Tito in the eye. There had to be something that's going to adjust Tito's balance. Because if Tito's just falling flat on his back with Sean on him, then Tito is even more of a goof than Vince was trying to already make him look.
I have one better. I think what was supposed to happen was that was supposed to happen, but I think Sherry was supposed to hold his legs.
Was supposed to grab the ankle, right? And force the leverage.
That's what wouldn't make sense, but Sherry is just like, I'm pretty.
But you know what? Maybe in this match, Sherry was coked out, and that's what got Sean started on his journey.
This is pre-US Marines. So
by the way, Moneymaker had the audacity to say that Sherry was looking good. Sherry looked good for a 1970s crack whore. Okay. Yeah. And my rule on
crack whore.
Listen, and let me just say this, Sherry Martel could have kicked my ass in any era of my life because everyone knows, documented, she's one of the toughest people to ever walk the wrestling business. I'm not trying to disparage her in any way, but that outfit they put on her, listen, I'm a big man. I know what makes me look less big. I know what makes me look palatable to the residents of New York City. Okay, I know. Someone should have told her, Sherry, this outfit makes your gut come out further than your chest. And this is a problem. Yeah. This is not what we're trying to sell when you're literally the manager of the sexy boy.
Right.
All right. At that point, you could have just thrown me and Push out there because we're more curvy than Sherry, and it would have worked better. Okay.
I think a nice romper would have been good for
her. Nice romper. Show off her thighs.
Yeah.
Listen, she had other
assets. Arm drags.
Oh, this was a one. I gave it a one just because I enjoyed Gorilla on commentary. Yes. And that is a theme throughout this night. They carried, we need commentating nowadays like they used to have because they're commentating the whole night.
I don't know. Great. I don't know because I got tired of the, will you stop? I don't want.
but here's the thing. That's the iconic back and forth between them. People love the will you stop. Yeah. And what I love, and again, for younger listeners, because they're always out there, when you hear these two commentators talk, notice the points where they stop talking. That's when they know you need to focus in on the match. Good commentators know when to butt in, when to put the talent over. And that's, again, big guy hit it right on the head. As these matches go over, I wrote down certain lines. I wrote down certain lines that Heenan's going to say because it's hilarious and it actually either puts a wrestler over or it breaks up the monotony. Okay. So I'm excited because things are going to get better as we talk about this show for a little while.
Yeah,
and then everything's going to go off the rails
for a little while. So we
sorry. Just real quick. Cause I found it. I found it. So this is again, In a spot where Tito hits a flying forearm, Heenan calls him the flying jalapeno.
Yeah, it does.
And when he hits a flying shoulder block, Heenan calls Tito the flying burrito. Like, it's shit like that. That is what Bobby the Brain Heenan brought to that match, where I'm laughing while I'm watching a meh kind of match.
Right.
Sorry, yeah, but sorry. You can't say that stuff nowadays, unfortunately.
You can. You can if you're committed to being a heel. I have no problem saying what I'm going to say because I'm not trying to be liked, Moneymaker. You're likable. The big guy is lovable. The Samoan push beats the men and the women off of him with a stick.
Hey, but well, I beat them off.
I'm saying in modern wrestling. But I have wrestling, no
desire. Yes, in modern wrestling, oh, it can be done.
No.
You want to know who can say it? Because he says it on Twitter and he'll say it in real life. MJF. That is your tried and true. I'm committed to being a heel. Whether you love my in-ring work or not, he knows what it is. I'm not here to sell shirts.
That's true.
Right? Yeah, so, again, you just have to be committed to saying it. That's all I'm saying.
And, no, you're right. And that man stays in character almost 24-7.
Yes,
I want to believe that's just who he is.
Yeah.
He wakes up with a scarf on. Just like.
Yeah. So we are now past the first match. I'm trying to wake up. So we're going into the second match, which is Jake the Snake versus The Undertaker. Spoiler, this is an early WrestleMania match, so you know Taker wins. Shocker. Can we talk a little bit how this is really when Jake started looking bad?
Yeah.
Can I quickly? So I love the fact you're going match to match. Because we skip over a really bad Mean Gene segment with the Legion of Doom that exposes that they are not good WWF promos.
No.
But Sean Mooney did talk with Jake, and the one thing Jake could do to mask his deteriorating physique was talk.
Yes.
And he, in what Jake says in his promo before this match, he tells us what this match is all about.
Yep.
He's going to leave Taker helpless. He's going to enjoy inflicting punishment. And everything is, once he hits the DDT, it's all over. So us now, you know, almost 30 years later, we know that the whole point was Taker's going to eat some DDTs in this one.
Yes.
And I just want to throw, again, Bobby Heenan, a master. Gorilla Monsoon says, oh, do you smell the smell of formaldehyde every time The Undertaker comes out? And Heenan goes, I thought that was your cologne. And I popped so hard. The cheesiest thing, but I popped so hard. And again, we all know Taker has really long entrances.
Yes.
So a joke like that breaks up the whole tension of it. And then the match happened. And I'll big guy, you can go ahead.
So we start the match. This match was rough to watch. I can't say that I remember too many early Jake the Snake matches without going back and reviewing something. But this Jake looked bad. He takes Taker over the top. And then, you know, Taker pulls out Jake the Snake out of the ring. He throws him into the ring post. You know, and it was bad. But when we get towards the end, but it wasn't a long match, which was good, which was really good. We get to the point where we get the DDTs from Jake on Taker. Obviously, you know, he's pumped up. He just hit a DDT and Taker and he sits up. He's going crazy. Hits him with another DDT. Taker sits up again, and then he gets that tombstone outside was insane. And like I said, we know Taker gets the win because this isn't a Brock Lesnar WrestleMania versus Taker. So, big guy, before we move on, this was another one arm drag to me. This was a very bad way. I don't remember these two matches. It's probably because I deleted them from memory. I don't know. But the first two matches of this WrestleMania were bad.
This one was an early Undertaker. Like, you see him still trying to get his groove of who he is as a character, I believe. I know he's only been with the WWE. This is, what, 93?
This is his second WrestleMania.
So yeah, Yeah, so this is only in a year and a half he's been there. So he's still finding himself as a wrestler. And with Jake the Snake, you're going to get a good psychological match every single time by the things Jake does in the ring where you see, you know, the little moves he does to get to the Undertaker, getting him set up for the DDT, hitting the DDT, the reaction Jake had from Undertaker sitting up, all these little things helped build the match up here. But as Big Guy said, Jake was really, he was looking bad. This was not a great match for him. Was it before this one or after it that he fought Sting in the coal miner's glove at Halloween Havoc? I gotta look that up.
That would happen after.
I think it did. Yeah, I think it's actually later this year. Jake just, he hit a really bad slope, and I don't think you can go back and say there were many great Jake Roberts matches. Like, yes, him and Rick Martel in the blindfold match was amazing. Him and Randy was good. But again, Jake was always about the psychology. It was always about this extra story that he was telling around him. This one was a one-arm drag for me as well.
So I'm going to be the most generous here because...
Uh-oh.
And it's fine. I agree with your scores based on the angle that you're viewing this match. For me, the story had to be told. You know, Jake already set the stage. It's about the DDT. It's exactly what New Japan did with Kenny Omega when they were talking about him versus Okada years ago. Well, if Kenny actually hits the one arm, you know, the one winged angel, he'll beat Okada. And what happened? That happened. For me, this match was the older running down vet against this creature, this ethereal thing. And it's funny that Bobby the Brain Heenan's like, that may be Lurch. Is that Lurch? You know, like he starts calling him Lurch in the middle of the match. This match was actually like a feeling out MMA fight. Taker held the center of the ring. Jake tried to stick and move. Jake was like, and that's the story you had to tell. It's not that I look at it as Jake couldn't do anything outside of how do we present Undertaker? I have to hit him. I have to make it look like everything I'm doing is ineffectual. So, you know, he's hitting the DDTs and he's going for the short arm clothesline to follow it up. The match is fine. This match to me is like an early version of what we got AJ Styles and Randy Orton at WrestleMania 35. People don't like that match. Push and I love it because it was two guys trying to accomplish one thing, and they accomplished it really well. So, you know, in terms of the psychology of this match, Jake's psychology gets it one arm drag from me. What they did in the ring, again, non-offensive, one arm drag from me. And the fact that a legendary move like the DDT was no longer the thing that was super protected is another one arm drag. That's why I gave it three arm drags. Is it an all-time great match? No. But it did what it needed to do to get Taker over. And that's the angle I'm looking at it from, which is why I'm being favorable to it now.
So it's my turn. Yay. What I appreciate so much about this is this was the rigor mortis Undertaker. This was the you can't get me down Undertaker. It was a huge pop when Jake was able to get him over the top rope, even though Undertaker landed on his feet. It was still like, he almost did it. Oh, like... You know, and what I can appreciate about this time is this is around the same time when like very, very basic moves wasn't seen as finishes anymore. Like the Harley Race suplex was like, all right, everyone does a suplex. It's whatever now. Mm-hmm. The DDT is getting kind of like phased out. Like now you got to be a little bit more like.
Oh, you mean like the super kick nowadays?
Yeah, like it's exactly. Like that's just it's just flooding the it's like it, talking about the super kick like in the match prior they call it like a side crescent kick.
Remember? Yeah, that's exactly what Gorilla called it.
It's a side crescent kick. So it didn't get the name that it has now. Watching it, I loved it because this is the way wrestling used to be. A lot of people don't understand that before Goldberg and you know Hulk Hogan took over when they got over, it's like, you know, it'd be a great idea, Vince, if I go over. Like Snake. Undertaker's the new guy coming up.
Yep.
I got to do the job for him.
That's exactly. It. Yeah.
That's what it is. And that's what I appreciate that about that because a lot of young guys now see old wrestlers winning. And you're not supposed to see old wrestlers win all the time unless it's like the same era going against each other. Right. Like if it was like a Cena versus Angle, then you would see a Cena win. Like that's something different here or there, right? But when you're seeing like you can appreciate the fact that Snake, knowing he's who he is, knowing that he's coming in with like a repertoire behind him to help this young guy, who by the way, he was like maybe like Mark Calloway is like what, like 8 years younger than Jake the Snake at the time.
No, Taker, where you're looking at Taker in his 20s right there. That's Jake in his late 30s.
Okay, I just want to be sure because everyone looks old next to Terry Funk. Everyone looks younger than me next to Terry Funk. I just try to be sure. So
Undertaker is 56. Jake Roberts, I'll tell you in a second. Go ahead, sir.
And then like the fact that he knew his time was coming. And mind you, this is around the Jake the Snake time that even though his matches were shit, he helped a lot of people go up. Remember, 316 right. is not too right. far from here. 316 is like a couple years from here. So I appreciate this. I'm giving this. I'm not giving it a 3, but I'm going to give it a 2. I'm going to give it a, well, 1 because the match was a squash match was supposed to be. And I'm giving it a 2 because he did the job. And I appreciate that.
Okay.
10 okay. years. 10 years. Yeah. So he was 30. So if Taker was 20.
Undertaker was 26.
27, 37. Yeah, it's not that bad.
Yeah.
It's better than Flair.
Yes. Yeah, but you know what? We'll get there in a second.
Yeah, yeah. We still got 2 matches, and then we'll get to
the main event.
The
mid-card main event.
Yeah, we'll get there. All right, so our next match is, I will say, my second favorite match on the whole card. This match was very enjoyable for me. Was Bret the Hitman Hart versus the Hot Rod, Roddy Piper, for the Intercontinental Championship. Now, nice segue into this match was the two in an actual interview before the match. So, you know, that was pretty cool with that back and forth. They try to do that stuff now. It just doesn't resonate. Piper was so good, man. Ah, he was so good on the mic. A lot of stuff happened in this match as we get there. I got to say, the first thing that came to mind with me was, thank God they tweaked Brett's music after this. Mm-hmm. You can't go wrong when you start a match. This is the armchair arm draggers, baby. You can't go wrong when you start the match with arm drags from both wrestlers. Come on. That gets me hyped right off the
get. Yes, sir.
Give us another one.
Get another one. Hit another arm drag. You know, so that's how this nice back and forth between these two, almost the whole entire match, My biggest thing that I liked out of this match was the point where the crowd's yelling at Piper. He goes and he grabs the title because Brett's with the ref. And he's like, should I hit Brett? Should I hit Brett with the title? And the crowd's like, no. It was a good play. I really enjoyed this match. Before we get to the rest of the stuff that happened, I gave us 3 arm drags. It was a good match. Nice back and forth. It told a great story between two friends. This was definitely a 3. Might be a little biased because I'm a fan of both Piper and Brett. I don't know. You know, you just got to take my word for it.
This one got a 4 arm drag from me.
Nice.
And I'll be upfront with you. I love this match. To me, this was a match where you saw two Roddy Piper try to be a technical wrestler at the start of the match to hang with Bret Hart and show, hey, I'm just as good of a technical wrestler as you are. And then throughout the match, you finally start to see it break down into a Southern style brawl where they're just sitting there throwing bombs at one another. And it goes from that really great technical match to the, hey, I don't care. We're in a back alley. I'm going to piss on you and I'm going to beat the shit out of you because I want this belt. And the crowd getting involved with it the way they did, I really, really enjoyed it. So, yeah, that's 4 for me.
Yeah, and I'll just throw my score out. It's a definite four for me. As Big Guy said, talking about the promo that, you know, comes before this match, Roddy's being Roddy, right? He's being boisterous. He's trying to be charming and a dick at the same time. And only Roddy Piper can do both of those things at the same time. No one else can be a charming dick. And that's just Roddy. And there's a great line here where, you know, Brett's, you know, telling Roddy, well, you want to do something, do it. And Roddy goes, why do it here when I can have a million people watch me rip your head off? That is Roddy. Mm-hmm. But we see happy-go-lucky Roddy in that promo. But when he comes out, it's all business Roddy. And only, like, at that time, only the great wrestlers had that switch. Let me go be cartoony for Vince on the promo, but let me show the audience when I come out, shit's about to go down. This match is two guys in tremendous shape. Yep. It is one era passing the torch to the other. And those are the best matches. You want to talk about a real level up match? This is Bret Hart's leveling up five levels in this one match because of who Roddy is. And you want to talk about getting excited because of the arm drags? I, for this match, was that example of that Vince McMahon meme where he's just getting more aroused as the meme goes on, because they started with that promo, so I'm already there. Then they did a collar and elbow tie-up, and I was like, oh! And then they did the arm drag, and then I exploded. I was just like, I couldn't contain myself. It was too much. And their counters, their back and forth, as Big Guy said, and as Moneymaker touched upon, Roddy trying to do Brett's world of technical wrestling is great. And Brett trying to do Roddy's, Bret Hart throwing a little deception in there, faking a shoulder injury.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my shoulder, it hurts. Pinfall attempt. It's just beautiful. And, you know, there's one thing, and again, it gets buried in this match, but it's Bobby the Brain Heenan. And it's Bobby the Brain Heenan at just the best that he can ever be. When this match started, they did a face-to-face, and Bobby goes, two ugly people looking at each other. That's fun. And it's just like, from that word go, you have a great match. You have them telling a story. Brett gets more juice than Brett has gotten at that point in his career.
Yep.
You know, I've always heard conflicting stories. Was he mad at Roddy because it wasn't supposed to happen? But we know Brett was always amazing at hiding his blade. Brett could blade and say, no, it happened for real. And we know Brett bladed. Mm-hmm. This was a great match. It has the ref bump in it. Both guys are tired as hell by the time we get to the finish. And that's what I want to see. I want to see a struggle. Brett wins with an innovative counter that we've now seen so many modern wrestlers use. And it's a viable counter. How do you counter a headlock, a sleeper hold? Well, you use leverage, and it's a great pinfall. And I love this match. And sometimes the biggest debate I have on this card is this better than Savage Flair? When you break it down as just a wrestling match, it's a debate I have, but I love it. It's a four arm drag for me.
Let's go.
I'm going to just give my score now, cause I want you to appreciate it. And I give it a four. I'm going to just say off the rip, I'm going to give it a four. I give it a four because there's something about this match that today's wrestling lacks massively of, which is, even we haven't seen this card in what, 20 years, 27 years, some shit like that. And what they did in that introduction already told me, all right, I'm already up to speed. I can watch 97 Orange Cassidy matches and not understand why he's in there with Neville. I don't get it. I will never understand it, but I appreciate that. It's hard work. It's the best things that I enjoyed so much about it was, one of my favorite parts is when they're going at it. The sad part is you can see the exact moment Piper's hip gives out on him is when Brett goes to the top rope to do his usual knee drop from the top. And then you see Piper's hip dislodge and go back in. I'm like, oh, and he's just like, he's just ready to, and I'm enjoying this. There's a lot of reversals. It was good that Brett won without having to use the sharpshooter, because when he was trying to implement the sharpshooter, Rowdy was just like, no. Like, there was a lot of tension. There was a lot of, any guy could have won no matter what. And the fact that it took Brett reversing his finisher at the time, which wasn't seen, was a good thing. It was an amazing thing. And unlike some people, I don't have to say which Mania it was from, I appreciate that when he lost the title, he gave it to him quickly and left. Unlike some people that was just like,
That's a beautiful shot at Hulk Hogan not wanting to give the belt to War.
Like, what? Oh, what?
What? He beat me? I don't want to give him the belt.
We'll have to bring them back when we do that Mania.
Why? It's a main. Listen, just real quick. That Mania served to give Hulk Hogan the match of the night, okay? Hulk Hogan, through the first 9 Manias that he was there for, Mania 1 and Mania 6 were like, oh, I'm in the best match of the night. He's only in the best match of the night for Mania 5 because Randy's there and Randy has allowed it, okay?
Yes.
But Randy got stuck in a mixed tag match against Dusty Rhodes, which we all know should have just been Randy versus Dusty. All right.
Which would have killed it.
Exactly. So don't even bother watching Mania 6 because it's all about, you know, who's the one leaking the most steroids out of his nipple. All right. That's what that Mania was about. Ugh, I hate Mania 6. I hate Hogan.
Everyone hates Hogan. I think Hogan's family hates Hogan. There's a reason. There's a reason why he wasn't welcome in his own home on his own show. Okay.
You're not lying because you know, coming up as a kid, I hated Hogan.
Yep.
I hate him more now that I'm older.
Of course.
I appreciate the NWO Hogan, but I still hate him.
Well, to give like a sneak peek, and we were talking about it, and I admit that I was a WCW kid growing up, mm-hmm. and the moment in which Hulk Hogan comes out to help Nash and Hall, drops a leg drop on Macho, I told Doc my reaction as like an 8-year-old was like, I was so mad that I was like, don't ruin this for me too, man. Come on. Because you know, once you see him, you're going to hear, oh, yeah, brother. To this day, as much as we all hate Sean for who he was as a person, him acting like that whole him versus Hogan angle made Michaels catapult miles better. And I'm happy that like these first 10 WrestleManias is going to explain to people like why Hulk Hogan is such a piece of shit.
So we're going to go now after that high of a match. Okay. We just watched an amazing match. Arguably, like Doc said, could have been match of the night to him.
Could have been match of the night.
Could have match. And we go to this nonsense of a fourth match. And I will be 100% honest. I had to pause this and probably 5 or 6 times it took me to get through this match.
It was a 6-minute match.
Yeah, exactly. And we had a 6-man tag match, or I'm sorry, 8-man tag match, not 6.
Hey, people got to get paid.
Yeah, people got to get paid. And that's what this was, just throwing a bunch of nonsense in a match because you had the Mountie, the good old Mountie. Who remembers the Mountie? Come on.
I mean,
Repo Man. Repo Man.
Your boy.
No, hey, he had great music. What can I say? And the Nasty Boys. How about them Nasty Boys, huh? I remember having the WWF tape that had the Nasty Boys music on it. And I used to listen to that all the time. Yeah. I said tape, folks. Some of you might not know what a cassette tape.
Look it up.
Look it up.
So 3 out of the 4 guys on that team were managed by Jimmy Hart.
Correct. Yeah. Correct.
Jimmy Hart managed half of this card, okay? I don't want to hear about Jimmy Hart managing that. I don't want to hear Jimmy Hart doing shit, okay?
They were up against the big boss man, Mr. Sergeant Slaughter, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and the Moneymaker's favorite wrestler of all time, Virgil.
Just because I can drive 25 minutes up the road and go visit him at a dirt mall on a Friday and pay $45 for a knockoff Ted DiBiase autograph doesn't mean I like him.
Let me tell you, Virgil has the most lame theme music in all of pro wrestling because the fact that he got the pinfall win and I have to hear that. Dun, 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 and I'm like, this is 80s elevator music. This is what Virgil's coming out to. This match is not even, to call it a dumpster fire is offensive.
I agree. This will get the first zero arm drag of the night from the big guy, because this was absolute nonsense. There have been times in their careers, except for Virgil, that I have liked seven of the eight people in this match, but this was ridiculous. I hated it. I was like, what is going on? It made my head hurt.
Was it everyone outside of Virgil that you liked?
Yeah, everyone outside of Virgil he liked.
Oh. I listen, for this match, right? Something I struggled with this match, and it's what I struggle with, you know, with any of Sergeant Slaughter's work after WrestleMania 7. I've told Push numerous times, WrestleMania 7 is a main event where the two guys in the title match were bald. I have never seen a situation.
You're bald.
I shave my head. Also, I'm going to use the appropriate line here. I was not going to let Mother Nature punk me out. Okay. So I took matters into my own hands.
Like,
and
that,
you know what?
That.
You know who else is bald? Stone Cold Steve Austin. But what I'm saying is, you're telling me Sergeant Slaughter and Hulk Hogan are this is the title match we all want. This is the title match we all deserve. This is why when I look at Sergeant Slaughter in this match,
when we go back to when we do WrestleMania 7, I will gladly debate that with you, because I have very good feelings on that match.
I hate everything involved with WrestleMania 7, especially because Randy loses the way he lost to the Ultimate Warrior. That's neither here nor there. This match, this eight-man tag, is an affront to any deity someone wants to point to. No. Whatever your religion, if you have a religion, this match offends it. I guarantee you.
Oh, this match is trash.
This is a $2 steak with no sizzle after the chef has pissed on it. Okay.
Yeah.
That's how horrible this match has been. And this match boils down to a moment where Virgil, you know, he's getting up. He had a near fall. He does a strut. He does his jive move. And then the Mountie just goons him from the back, just clubs him. And I'm just like, this is your career, Virgil. Right. You're the guy doing dancing, and then some lesser wrestler is going to club you from the back. This is a zero arm drag from me.
Hey. The Mountie is not a lesser wrestler than Virgil.
I have no respect for people who possess that kind of gap tooth situation going on. Right? It's the exact same reason why I don't respect who Michael Strahan.
Listen, but it's gone now.
Is Michael Strahan far more successful than I'll ever be? Probably. Is he more handsome than me? Probably. Is he taller than me and in better shape? Probably. But you know what I don't have?
Probably
that problem. Funny. And that's what I'm going to hang my hat on. Actually, I could hang my hat on the gap in his teeth. just like I could with the Mountie. So the Mountie can go fuck himself too. Also, because hindsight is, you know, what it is. We now know historically that the Mountie tried, if I'm remembering this correctly, Kevin Owens said the Mountie was pretty much a really bad person to learn wrestling from when he learned wrestling from him. So what am I going to praise the Mountie on? Seriously, he was wearing a retrofitted Buckingham Palace outfit that they were just like, throw some brown in it. What's the difference between a Brit and a Canadian? Canadians wear brown too. That's what that shit was, okay? And this match is garbage.
You're right. It was terrible.
And the most over guy in this match with me is the Repo Man.
That's right.
Just because he's the Repo Man. Just because, look, I love Big Boss Man. I love him as Big Bubba. But this is the kind of shit that he had to throw his shoes away after this. He stepped in it. And then it was like, okay.
Man, do you not understand how much legacy was in this match? Hacksaw, the first Royal Rumble winner. The Nasty Boys, who beat up Ken Shamrock inside of a hotel room. This is so much behind this, and I love it. Repo Man, I forgot how much I love that gimmick. Him and Brooklyn Brawler. One and two in my heart. Just because Brooklyn Brawler is like a homeless Italian man from like Bushwick. I fucking love it.
This match is the perfect Cialis or Viagra commercial.
Well,
for the 90s.
If you go back to episode 5, our last episode, mm-hmm. there was a old man battle royale. I got that from WrestleMania 17. I understood why they did that. Because of this nostalgia, you had the older names in this giant battle royal, even though it was very tough to watch, as Moneymaker will say. Mm-hmm. But this
goddamn Iron Sheik sitting Iron in the Sheik. Fucking corner the whole goddamn match and never even getting close to being thrown over the fucking
this ring. This one just was, no. You know, like I said, Repo Man was like... Push said was the best part of this.
I'm match. Giving this a one on two premises.
Oh,
what the hell?
Repo Man,
are you drinking drugs?
Repo
what Man, the hell is wrong with you?
I'm giving it a one because Repo Man and the pop Hacksaw got when he said, oh.
No, when he started a USA chant, he was literally paid to show up that night and start a USA chant.
That's it. Yep.
All you heard him say was he tagged Big Boss Man and said, oh. And you heard the whole crowd do it. I'm like, that one, that got the one. I miss pops like that. We don't get pops like that anymore.
No,
I hate watching wrestling now and everyone just sits there like it's a German audience saying like, yeah. Like,
they're watching a German porn, let's be honest.
That's true. That
they're all true. They're all sitting on their hands.
Yeah, I used to watch the Fire Wrestling, so I know watching German audiences like be boring.
Oh Jesus.
Yeah.
So after that match, I mean, you could say this was the get your popcorn, go get your drinks, go get your snacks.
Go because to the refund.
The actual main event of this WrestleMania, and there I don't think any of us are going to argue that this should have been the main event. Is about
Hogan
to go down.
Must pose.
And this is the Macho Man, Randy Savage versus the Nature Boy, Ric Flair, for the world title with the backstory of Liz driving this whole match. Oh, Doc's getting ready.
What you need to understand is Flair, you talked about Elizabeth. You had no right to talk about Elizabeth, and then you put your hands on her, and you're going perfect. You're talking about pictures you have of Elizabeth. Well, in this match, you're going to get some of this one. Yeah, Flair, I'm going to get a piece. Yeah. Ooh, Moneymaker, talk before I take it over here.
I was just enjoying Savage. You know, it was really good.
You're enjoying it, but my co-host is not even looking because he's tired of this shit. Yeah.
No, I got my own. Like, let me go first because I don't got much to say because I know Doc's gonna like rev it up. I'm giving this a five.
Yeah.
I'm giving this a five. I love. From the introduction to when Ric Flair comes out and you see the audience, such a good pan. When everyone's like running down, like, oh my God, somebody important. And they all like ran down to go see him. So right before, even prior to that, you hear Flair like this, the Nature Boy. When Mr. Perfect is behind them holding the centerfold of Miss Elizabeth. And then they go to Macho Man's and they go like this. He might not be ready. He may be ready. He might not even be here. He may be here. Miss Elizabeth might not be here. She is here because we saw her, but she might not be here. And I'm like, and then they call him out and then they all come on. It's all exciting. And then the reason this was initially going to get a four, but the fact that Shane McMahon came out looking like a 40-year-old man, I was like, that's Shane, and he looks really fucking old. And I know he's like 12 in this fucking Mania. It was a good match. It was a hard-hitting match. I loved the fact that Macho was against the ropes the entire time, fighting everyone back, and was still able to pull it off. I hated the fact it wasn't enough for me to give it a downvote. Was after Macho won, he proceeds to look like to get jumped by everybody. Like, it looks
God
like
girl. Damn it, you're jumping into my spot. What I was gonna talk about.
Okay, so I'll let you talk about it. So
listen, I can't hold it anymore. I had to watch for months on months that platinum blonde bitch Ric Flair talk about my woman, my wife. And I gotta tell you, nothing was more majestic when you watch the playback of Randy Savage in all gold gliding down the aisle. That's right. Never before had a wrestler glided down the aisle on the way to the ring. And let me tell you, this match is all about the intensity I brought. Because without that intensity, you got Perfect getting his hands on my business, pulling me out of the pinfall. I hit the perfect elbow drop on Flair. I was going to put him down for the 1-2-3. And then that perfect bitch pulls me out of the ring. But I still got mine. And what Push is saying is 100% correct. Because first off, I'm the one getting double teamed. But all the officials want to stop my 90-pound wife from coming down to the ring when she's obviously my manager, which means contractually she has a right to be down there. But no, David Hebner, you human piece of garbage. Shane McMahon, I'm not even sure you're a McMahon. You might be mine, but you come down to the ring putting hands on Elizabeth. And then what happens? I still get the pinfall because after all the beating I took, having my left leg worked on, I got a piece of those tights, Flair. I got a piece of those tights and I took your belt because to take your belt is to take your soul. But then what happens as I'm trying to get more pieces of you? I get mobbed by every WWF official. Jack Tunney, you run a crooked ship, my friend. You run a crooked ship because I was the one getting jobbed in that fight up until winning. And yet your guys decided to hold me down so that Flair could get a couple more shots in. But you know what he didn't get? You know what he didn't leave with? The WWF World Heavyweight Championship, the richest prize in the game. Yeah. And that's why this is a five-arm drag match, yeah, because I persevered, and I took a piece of you, Ric Flair. I took a piece.
I can listen to that. We might as well just end the show there.
Yeah, I got goosebumps listening to that. That was absolutely amazing.
I'm blown up now, guys.
So I'll go next. On that one, on this match, I can't go after Doc. That was just absolutely amazing. But
that's why I went first.
I really enjoyed this match because it was the first Flair Savage match that you like. Savage is known to really put together great matches, and Ric Flair. A lot of people will go back and go, "Oh, Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat was probably one of the best series of matches ever." You're not wrong. It was a very good match. Some people even go back and say Ricky Steamboat versus Randy Savage, one of the best matches ever. Hands down, one of the best wrestling matches ever done. This, in my opinion, was better than Savage Steamboat because I believe Ricky Steamboat is one of the best wrestlers, hands down. Technically, everything he does in the ring makes sense and flows. Where you see like Ricky Steamboat is like a nice stream, I look at Ric Flair as like a raging river in some regards, because everything he does is not just leading to the next thing, it's leading to two or three things down the line as well. And then when you have Randy Savage taking what Ric Flair does best, and you take Randy Savage going, okay, so what you're going to do here is going to come into a factor three moves or four moves down the way in this beat of a story, it just makes it that much better. And the thing for this match for me that really brought it all back for me was, I was remember being at a friend's house watching this match, and they when the pull apart happened at the end, and you start seeing the Flair's blood all over the back of the one guy's suit. The whole pop where I was watching it, everyone just thought that was the greatest thing. And as an adult, I'm just sitting there like, damn, that suit got ruined by Flair's blood. Oh, damn. But yeah, it was a five-arm drag for me.
The big guy's coming in, and we are going to mark it down. This everybody is giving the same score because this is the first time in show history the big guy is giving out his five arm drag match, because this match was amazing. And I mean, this match might have come into play in a different contest that is going to be going up here soon. So get ready for that. If it's not posted yet, it was a finals question that this match played a part in. So get ready for that. It's going to be posted by Melee Media. So get ready. It's coming. But this match was amazing. It was great. There's not much you could say. The story behind this match was amazing. And as a young teen, and this is when I was backyard wrestling, thinking I was going to be the next guy in, you know, ECW coming up from Pittsburgh. But, you know.
Weren't you 10 in this?
No, this was.
92.
92. I was 11.
Okay, so you still weren't a teenager yet.
Same
Go ahead and continue.
What my
and
11
ECW was the my, round.
You see the size disparity between you and the
and
big
your
guy?
11 are completely different.
Exactly. I was going to say the size disparity between him and his cat. That's what there's just. You don't see the size difference between you and your cat.
But you know,
this is the small cat.
They're like.
For those who don't know what the hell's going on, Push is making fun of Steve, you know, being kind to his own kitten.
He's over here petting like an ocelot, like just like, yes.
I think that's what caught Push off guard, is that Push thought your cat was an ocelot and you were going to be attacked for some reason.
Oh, no. Someone, there's a puma in his home.
Oh, what? I'll be there in 10 minutes, moneymaker.
Make it 20 because you have to stop by to see Virgil.
Oh, yeah, I got to stop. Well, that's the other direction. But the bad thing about this match was it was so good and it told such a great story that maybe the next four matches wouldn't seem so bad. Maybe. No, no, I don't know. No, I don't no, know. I no, could no, be wrong.
No.
But this match right here should have ended WrestleMania 8.
Absolutely.
This should have been the end of the show. There's no point whatsoever for the next four matches. None. Zero. Zilch.
The only point for the main event is because Vince, I'm pretty sure, had incriminating documents being threatened over him by Hulk Hogan.
And
okay,
you're
either that or...
Hey, this is right before the steroid trial.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
I'm going to say this now. I'm under the impression that Hulk Hogan has to give one of the best throat jobs of all time. Because there is no goddamn way this man can go from WWE or F to WCW to TNA and just completely take over. I'm like, what are you like? Are you giving reach arounds? Right. Like, just off, like, my name is Hogan. Like, just automatically just reaching behind, like, and the Eric Bischoff is like, oh, I feel safe.
No, that's not what Bischoff's saying. Bischoff and Vince are like, call me brother. Say it all one right. more time for me. Call me, bro.
All right. I got to at least take the opposing side to the argument.
Reach rounds?
Someone has to be the other side of the debate.
It's fine. You're nay on reach rounds. We get it.
Yes. Hogan. So in Vince's eyes, you had to be a Greek god to carry the card. Look at Bruno. Look at Pedro. That's where Hogan came in. Give me another person on this card that could have closed it out that looked like Hogan. Now I'm not saying that, and Vince always had Hogan had to go on last because you had to send the people home happy with Hogan posing.
The people would have been happy with Macho Man winning.
Oh, yes. I agree. Yes. I still think that should have been the final match. But I'm just giving you Vince's reasoning.
Yeah, we all know Vince's reason, but we can still shit on Vince's reasoning because there's no actual sane reason to love Hulk Hogan the way Vince loves Hulk Hogan. I get
he made
Vince's,
him a millionaire.
No. Vince McMahon made Hulk Hogan a millionaire. Vince McMahon saw this balding, just jacked up to the gills monster in Rocky III and said, that's my guy. I am going to build the biggest hype machine. This is no different than the businessman who found the person who created Coca-Cola saying, I'm going to back you and your soda is going to be the biggest thing, but I get all the money. Yeah. This is exactly what this is. Okay. This is, for those of you who have the opportunity to watch The Founder on Netflix, Michael Keaton, an amazing actor playing Ray Kroc, who stole the McDonald's Corporation away from the McDonald's brothers. This is exactly that. Vince McMahon saw Hulk Hogan and said, we're going to make billions, but I'm going to make more.
And I'm going to steal them away from the AWA and kill their whole production.
Exactly. Exactly. And no one on this earth can look. I understand Vince's hard on for Shawn Michaels. Shawn was edgy. Vince probably thought he was beautiful from the back. He probably looked like Linda in college. I get all that. Wow. I get all that.
Holy shit.
Okay, I get all that. I do not get the love for Hulk Hogan. I just don't. And that's all I'm going to say about Hulk Hogan. And for everyone else listening, get ready, because if you think anything is getting higher than a two, and yes, this is my one little teaser, one match in the next four matches gets a two, and it's based on a technicality that I just want to score it higher than a Hogan match. Okay. It's a vindictive two.
All right. Bring on that next one.
The next match in the four matches of nonsense is the model Rick Martel. I have forgot about him. I'll tell you that.
What?
Versus Tanaka.
AWA
Tatanka, baby. Tanaka was a former pitcher for my New York Yankees.
Tatanka, sorry. That's a botch like the rest of this card. The best part about this match, I'm getting excited again, you can't see it, was we got an arm drag to open the match, baby. Let's go. Woo! And that was it.
I love Bobby Heenan anytime Tatanka is in the ring.
Again.
I wrote down the line. Is he dancing or does he have a tack in his shoe?
Yes.
I died with
Would
that.
Would you line. Stop?
Would you stop it?
And unfortunately, this character would not exist nowadays. So
it would, because he's actually a Native American.
Yeah, he would be fine.
You might be right. You might be right there. But
Chief J Strombo, not likely.
Oh, Strombo? Oh my God. But that's in an earlier episode.
Or Jimmy Wang Yang. What was it called? Jimmy Wang Yang.
Jimmy Wang Yang, the Japanese cowboy. It's amazing.
That is in episode one of ACAD.
That it is.
But this got a one arm drag. You know, we're going down that path right now where this started to get very long for these next three well, this match included. So the next four matches where
this match went 4 minutes.
Yeah, 4 minutes. But when I say long, I mean it took me a very long time to get through the next four matches, even though this one was very short. So one arm drag for me, guys. I don't know what else you guys have to say about this. There's not much.
It was one for me, but I will say Push was saying it earlier, that did he have to watch the rest of the card after the Savage match? I felt the exact same way. Like, I was like, oh man, Hogan's next. All right, I'm done. Like, this is great. There it goes, Savage Flair Hogan. Oh, what the hell? Why the hell's Tatanka coming to the ring? What's this shit?
You see Rick Martel in the back doing his interview in front of those dusty lockers, going like, ha ha. Like, it's like, all right, damn it.
I was like, what kind? No, this is a tease. This was a giant cock tease is what it was. One arm drag.
So, yes, one arm drag. But here's the thing, gentlemen. This match was all about Heenan and Monsoon. Again, just talking shit the way they did during the first match. But this match also is another example of a member of Strikeforce, because Martel and Tito were teammates together, and they both jobbed to the guys who would curtain jerk WrestleMania 9. Because WrestleMania 9 opens with Shawn versus Tatanka. So this match is just, let me tell you, son, no one can accuse Vince McMahon of not being able to book over a year, because he literally took WrestleMania 8. How can I make a great 80s tag team look stupid? I'm going to make them lose to the guys who are going to open next year's show, because that's what they did. But because it doesn't offend my rule, it's not offensive to wrestling. It's just boring. and the fact that they started with a collar and elbow tie-up, one arm drag.
I am giving it one because it's good to see that there is at least one Native American in there. We all know Diesel was the other one, but he refused to acknowledge it for a while. And, I mean, it was a good match to allow you to take a nap.
Well, that's basically the rest of the card.
I can't nap for 4 minutes. What the hell are you talking about?
Bro,
you have like a toddler, you can nap for 4 minutes.
I
can't even go to the bathroom for 4 minutes.
Because let me give context to what happened, okay? So a lot of people don't understand. They understand, right? Before this match comes out, before Martel gets interviewed, they show a fake press conference where for some reason Hogan and Sid is sitting right next to each other.
No. Macho Man's, I'm right in the middle of these two dickheads. Yeah.
Yeah. Like they're on the same side as Piper's on the other side by himself for some reason.
Because he's smart.
He's by himself. I'm like, there is six chairs and there's four of you. Why is three of you on one side? What am I missing? What reach around is being tall on this side? And then I'm here like I'm falling asleep because I wake up and I see Sid Vicious with white stuff on his face. I'm like, okay, whatever. I'm dozing off. Next thing I know, I come out, I see Tatanka doing his Neil Cross getting blessed on. I'm like, oh, it's one of these matches. Okay. I wake up again, and the match is over. So I'm giving it one because they let me fall asleep. It wasn't too action-packed. If this was like Flair Macho and I fell asleep, I would have been woken up, and I would have been very disappointed at this quality of a match being woken up to. I'm giving it a one on the basis of it let me take a nap.
Very nice. And we go to the next terrible match in a row. We have Money Inc.
I got a good story about this.
Versus Natural Disasters. This was supposed to be for the tag team titles. Oh my God. The thing that stand out to me the most was the botch trying to put Typhoon over the top. I just laughed when his big self bounces off the ropes and he's like, oh wait, I was supposed to go over. Hold on.
he was foreshadowing 2 years down the line for when he was going to be the Shockmaster.
Oh, yeah.
And fun story. If you ever,
how dare Trent, you make fun of someone who suffers obviously from vertigo.
And fun fact, if you ever meet Fred Hoffman, and you bring up Shockmaster, he doesn't get too happy. He gets quite angry at you. And whenever you had him sign his Shockmaster, especially if it's him falling down something on that item, he gets very, very upset that you're having him sign it as Shockmaster. Just saying, from a person who might have had that happen.
With the ending of this match, there wasn't too much stuff going on. I mean, I don't understand. They were trying to put Natural Disaster over as a dominant tag team in this match, but they didn't give them the titles, but they won by count out. I don't know. Vince is crazy. I don't know. This got a one for me just because watching a tag team champions run away with their tag titles, which was great.
I gave this a negative one.
Oh!
This is a negative one arm drag. Because when
that's
you
our
are
first negative.
That's right. When you are Fred Ottman as Typhoon, formerly having wrestled as Tugboat, you are probably one of the best big men. And by big men, I mean wide men of your day. When you're supposed to get double clotheslined, which a clothesline is supposed to hit you right in the clavicle, right in your chest region, and the contact is made, but you take a back bump the other direction because he gets clotheslined, spins around, and falls on his back in reverse. I don't know if he was trying to show Vince that he knows a little ballet and he can pirouette or do any of that bullshit, but this is where I had to believe. This is what connected the Shockmaster to me. This man has tinnitus. He has an inner ear problem. The world is constantly spinning for him, and he falls. He is a fall risk. And at his age right now, he's what, in his 60s, his 70s? I think we need to start a GoFundMe because eventually the next fall is going to break his hip. And once you're around that age and you have a broken hip, Your life expectancy goes down. So we need to do all we can to help Typhoon. He's 64. This is like, if we don't plan to take care of him now, it's not going to get better. And this
especially
match,
weighing 385 pounds.
What makes this match more egregious? They had a rematch at SummerSlam later this year, right after WrestleMania 8. Legion of Doom gets taken out of the tag team match for the titles because Hawk is, you know, drunk Hawk. Mm-hmm. Even though we all love drunk Hawk, drunk Hawk ain't a good thing in 1992. And they end up with a rematch. It's a garbage match. And this is Vince telling us all he hates tag team wrestling. Yeah. It's a negative one. Again, I'll start the GoFundMe. It'll be a GoFundMe for Fred Ottman. All the funds will go into the Fred Ottman Melee Media Fund. Where those assets will get diverted, I cannot say. But
that's
let's
my
try.
Charity next Melee season.
Jesus. the Human Fund. God, just push, save me.
What I will say is, I'd rather have Shockmaster be mad at me than have William Regal, who's currently mad at me. I'll have a 64-year-old, 400-pound man be mad at me than a pot of blue-eyed European, who I still look up to, but looks down on me as like, you womanist. Like,
he wanted to call you an idiot that day.
He wanted to call me an idiot. Damn you, Blackjack. I'll never forgive you. This is going to go on every podcast. People will know my pain.
People will not know what you're referencing.
Yeah, yeah, I have no clue to this.
So long story short. Yeah, you do because you judge that Melee Mania. Long story short, there was an Evolve Wrestling show here in New York. Push and I went. It was at the time when we were helping to promote Evolve events, and they were giving us money on the back end to do so. And William Regal was doing a meet and greet. So we did it. And I had a meet and greet. I mean, William Regal, one, is just one of the nicest people in the world. He's courteous, a great storyteller. I enjoyed every bit of it. I got 5 minutes with him. Push got 20 minutes with William Regal because William Regal was enjoying his conversation with Push. The only problem is our buddy, Blackjack, he had a female friend attend that show, and she begged Push to ask the question, what would it take for a woman to succeed in wrestling? To which William Regal said, I mean, I'm going to paraphrase here. He pretty much hinted, it's about being a good wrestler. It's not about your gender. Like, gender has nothing to do with it. And you saw, like, I'm literally on the other side of the ring at my seats looking at the happiness drain from William Regal's face because he was having an engaging time with Push, and then it went all away because he thought Push was a sexist.
And you know what's the crazy part about it is, like, his assistant was trying to rush us, and he was like this, one moment.
Yeah, William Regal's literally telling his assistant, these other people online can wait.
And then ever since then, Blackjack is like,
I'm sorry, Push.
I'll make it up. Making that up.
To this audience, Blackjack does sound like Fat Albert. It's not a coincidence.
Can you also tell that I am, like, buying time to not talk about this match?
I know you're trying to avoid, but listen, look, what is it? A zero? Is it a negative?
It's going to be a zero because, look, it was boring. This is around the match that I was just like, I can't do this. I have two more matches. Like, there's two more matches coming up after this. I can't do it. I can't. I'm
but
sorry.
The next match was a banger.
No, it wasn't.
Listen, so man,
we will get to that next match right now. So yeah. Push, you're off the hook for this, brother.
Oh, thank God.
All right, so I gave this a one for one reason and one reason only. The amazing backflip that Mr. Owen Hart did right off of that top rope at the beginning of the match. And we're talking about, we got Owen Hart versus Skinner. Why? Why? What was the point of this? I have no idea. If someone could fill in a backstory,
I'm going to fill this in for you right now.
But the amazing backflip, Owen got this a one just on that.
Listen, Skinner did something in this match that made me pop.
Yes.
He did some BS in the ring and then did a pose and some hillbilly chant. And I'm like, this is dedication to your gimmick. This man, who I have never enjoyed a match of, this is the only Skinner match that I can ever remember. And because it's under 2 minutes, I believe, right? It did
minute
not go
36.
Long.
Minute, it was boom.
There you go. This match got Skinner over with me in that I now see why Vince pays you. You make Vince laugh. You can make Vince laugh, which is why you can be there. But Owen Hart, this match gets one arm drag because Owen's in it, an arm drag because Skinner made me laugh. This is a two-arm drag for me, and it is also my excuse to grade it higher than Hogan's match.
This was a one-arm drag for me. And fun fact for people out there who don't know, Skinner goes on to be the second Doink after Matt Bourne turns his red nose white in the locker room and gets let go and goes to WCW and he becomes reborn again. But this match to me, it just, in the minute 36 that it was, it showed me how good Owen really was. And the other thing was Skinner, fun fact for this, and I can't believe the guy did it. He would wrestle with chew in his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
I would
such a hellbilly.
I would have
easy money maker. Easy. Some people out there listening might got weak stomachs.
I would have. I'd have puked on that.
He's
one.
Gonna do it. He's gonna do it.
He's gonna puke. It's a nice shout out to our homeboy Wildcard. That's also.
What was that video? Was that Beyond the Mat?
Yes.
Yeah. Could you imagine sitting at a desk with Vince and Vince is getting into, like, really getting into announcing that you're about to throw up?
I would have. So instead of doing it in the bucket, he should have, like, projectiled on the Vince.
I think he tried to, but he was too nervous. He was like,
he should have had a full stomach.
Yeah, okay.
I think this fool was so nervous about meeting WWE, he forgot to, you know, fill his stomach with the gimmick.
Chicken pot pie. I'm going to give it a quick one. I'm giving this a two just because it's Owen Hart. That's the right. And the sad thing is there is 15 minutes of matches. When you combine the time of this match and then in the main event, there's 15 minutes worth of matches. And Owen Hart is the far superior wrestler of these 15 minutes of matches.
Yes. Oh, what? I'll make that argument in a minute because Sid, no, my you God, cannot, Sid.
No, the man who did a top rope boot, big boot, just cannot be on the same level as Owen Hart.
Well, that's my whole plan to base this argument
on. All right,
man. I love Owen Hart so much. I might name my next son Owen just so I could call him the Pocket Rocket while he's a toddler.
As long as
you. Oh, my God.
Let's go.
Call him a little nugget.
I'm not a nugget. I'm a Nighthawk.
No, I don't like the nugget deal. Pocket Rocket all the way.
So then we get into the last match because it wasn't a main event. And I was a Sid fan. I was always a Sid fan. I always bent over into the big guys. I kind of like gave them a lot of love. I still do today, you know. And we had Sid versus Hogan. Why? I get the storyline was Hogan supposedly's last match. Sid's going to send him out on a stretcher. This match was terrible. If you even want to call it a match.
I did not remember Harvey Whippleman. Like, I remembered Harvey Whippleman,
yeah.
But him as Sid's manager, I was like, why the fuck is Downtown Bruno coming out to the ring with goddamn Sid right now? This does not look right. This looks fucking atrocious.
So the big guy's right in that this is not a match. I thought they were going to end WrestleMania with the funeral parlor because that this contest was dead before it was started. And I have one note on this match. By the way, for anyone who loves Sid Justice, Sid Vicious, any my biggest problems with him, one, I could tell from the knee down those bones were weak. The same thing I said when Brock Lesnar debuting in WWE looking like a titan, and yet you could tell from the knee down, son ain't right. All right, so there's that. Sid rocking The only person who could rock that hairdo, in my opinion, is Magnum TA. So if you are not Magnum TA, do not rock that hairstyle. You do not have the right. You look weird. And this match boils down to one line, Sid. This isn't even said on the show. This was said in like a vignette. Mm-hmm. Sid's whole line, "I curse you." That alone gets a one arm drag from me because of how he delivered it. Ah, curse you. Like, I'm just like, all right, Sid, you got one arm drag, because from now on, when people piss me off on the road, I'm not going to honk. I'm not going to bully them. I'm going to lower my window and yell, ah, curse you.
And a second voice too on top of that.
Yeah.
But he has Puerto Rican flags all over his car. What's going on?
So then don't call me Sid, call me Seed.
I'm gonna jump in here. I'm gonna say, outside of Magnum, you know who else had who could rock that mullet? Was David Schultz. Oh my god.
Oh, Dr. D. David Schultz. Yeah. Okay, I'll give you that. Yeah. I'll take it back.
Slap a man so hard that the grease hits the wall. I give you. You think this is fake? And then the grease hits the wall.
Oh man.
You know who else had a good mullet?
Yeah.
Waller.
You see, but Waller, it's a different it's a different texture of mullet, right?
Yeah.
Because with Schultz, Sid, and Magnum, it's that it's like that curly hair.
That Jerry curl.
Yeah, mullet. It's that weird mullet. Like, I could never envision anyone rocking that.
You could tell they hot ironed it before they came out. Like, they like like Sid Vicious is inside his hotel room with Arn Anderson.
Until they get a hold of this. Not even that. Could you imagine in that Mania locker room, the only person tall enough to do that for Sid is Taker. So Taker's hot ironing Sid's hair.
No.
I would pay to see that.
No, I would love to see if him and Hogan is doing it. I'll curl it if you straighten minds. Okay. But I'm happy that we're having fun from this fucking negative 5-star match or whatever the fuck this was. This was negative 5 arm drags for me. This was awful. The highlight was the only highlight to it is like knowing how Vince was when he's like, "Go, Papa, no. Just in the gorilla position. Why is he not listening to me? Yeah. Go! They're like, where is, like, I wished that we had the reality era back then a little bit so I could just see Vince like,
like a camera of Vince having a heart attack because no one's listening.
and just yelling out racial epithets like there. You fucking bouncer. You nobody.
Right.
It's so, they, I feel like they didn't want to wrestle. I feel like they literally was just like, we're here for a check.
Yep.
Let's get in, let's get out. And that's good for like a pre-show. Like, I'm fine with that when it comes to a pre-show. But you don't do that as the main event. You don't take pie in the face to not care. They sold Sid Vicious by him throwing people with a stretcher into the steps for like 5 minutes of him like, oh my god, he's so dangerous. Will the Hulk Mania be able to get through him? Of course he will. He was in a movie. All right. It's fine. You have nothing to worry about. Like, this match was awful. I know this match was awful because we covered WrestleMania recently, and I remember how bad it was because this is the first time I contemplated quitting the podcast. I wanted to quit because I'm like, I can't talk about this match. This match is awful. This is sad. This is pathetic. And I hate the fact that this Sid Vicious who was around the Four Horsemen. I will never consider him like in the Four Horsemen. He was around the Four Horsemen, who was the same Sid Vicious that had a decent match against Diesel. And I'm like, what is going on here? How much are they paying you? What are the reach arounds? You should be ashamed of yourself, Hulk Hogan. You should be. You racist. I hate Hulk Hogan. I do. I remember when Kevin Owens won the title, he sat here and said, "Wow, that Kevin Owens sure knows how to do politics." No, you fucking racist. You goddamn racist. And it's not allegedly, we all heard you with your Hulk Hogan's penis is 8 inches, but mine's a 6. You racist.
So this got a negative 2 stars.
Okay. I thought you were gonna try to one up me, but
all right. No. I gave this a 0.
I'm giving this -5, so no one's gonna. Don't no one prices right me, okay? No one be like negative five and a half.
What did the last panelist say? Negative five, negative six.
Thank God.
Oh, I don't give negatives. This was a zero. And there was no positive spin I can put on this. None. I'm usually pretty could pick a positive spot for each match.
So no. My question is, all right, so I've got you three here. Mm-hmm. Were they trying to get Papa Shango into the main event status?
No. They were trying to set up his feud with Ultimate Warrior. Because why else would they feud after this match?
But that's right. Fine. That's fine. So they're trying to set that up. So and Warrior is clearly a main eventer. So it's almost like they're trying to level Papa Shango up to this main event status.
You know, okay, so the thing is, they had to do something with Warrior that didn't involve any other main eventer because I don't think Vince knew what he wanted to do yet with Sid and if that would factor in with Warrior. He needed somebody to be the bridge for Warrior to get in with Macho Man and be involved in that storyline against Flair and Razor. And that's what
could
that was
all about.
Could
you imagine a Flair Warrior?
I can imagine Vince trying to sell Flair on it, and the minute Warrior botched something, Warrior is going to eat like one of the deadliest chops, but it's not even going to hit the chest. I could see Flair saying, oh, you want to do that? These eye gougers are going to feel real, real to you now, buddy. Okay.
Like the first time Warrior picks him up by the balls to do the press.
Oh, my God.
There goes Space Mountain.
Don't. Why are you laughing about damaging a national landmark?
Because it'd be funny.
I would never wish ill on Rick unless I'm the one doing it. I would never wish ill on Rick, so I can't condone this. I can't. No, thank you.
I will sit here and say I give Ric Flair so much credit for basically what he spent, like, 8 months in WWE? And prior to him going back to WCW, he had a hell of a run in there.
Winning
the best Royal Rumble.
Yep.
And then going straight to Mania, having like one of the best matches WWE had at that time.
I thought you were trying to make fun of the way the WWE did the greatest Royal Rumble in Saudi Arabia.
No.
Just going to rebrand the 92 Rumble the best Royal Rumble. We're never even going to just...
he had a great run. Like, he sat there and showed, like, I'm going to show you why I'm great, and I'm going to leave. And keep in mind, he was 42 years old. The best match of the card came from a 42-year-old man.
He killed it. Flair, there was not. It's a shame that Vince, after Flair had this rocket start and rocket like to stardom just to put Randy back over, that Vince felt there was nothing else he could do with Flair. Like, that is the true crime of all.
Well, how about this? It's not even saying he had nothing left to do with Flair, because I'm pretty sure we're in the stage where now we're thinking about what could have been and what ended up being after this pay-per-view. By all accounts, Vince was telling Flair, oh, well, if you stay on, it's going to be you losing to all the guys I'm trying to bring up. And that's the thing. That is your dead giveaway. Vince does not care about legacies when it comes to pro wrestling. People are assets. And again, I'll reference Jim Cornette, because when you want to learn about something, you should probably go to the masters for it. And he is someone who knows more about pro wrestling than most of us will ever learn. Vince can be one of the nicest guys to you, but once you've run up your usefulness, all right, bye. And to him, it's no hard feelings. And that's who he is. And that's not me saying this out of firsthand knowledge. It's from people who knew him that all say the same thing. And that's the damaging thing about how did the WWE, how did we allow it as fans? Because we had to get caught up in the pageantry of it. How did we allow someone who cared so little for this industry that, you know, especially the four of us, we love pro wrestling. Mm-hmm. We love pro wrestling when it's at its best, because it's fun, it's engaging. You see people that you're like, okay, those are some real athletes doing some shit, but I want to know inside baseball. I want to know how they do it. How are they able to make me feel this way, even though I know this is pretty much like me watching a movie, right? The actors are still alive, even in the horror film. I saw them get killed. Like, you know something's up, but how did these great people get me to feel otherwise? Ric Flair is one of those guys. And the fact that Vince could do one of those, oh, no hard feelings, I don't really think that much of you in the end type deals with Ric Flair, it really makes me question his intelligence as it applies to pro wrestling. But then again, we're talking about the man who says, well, I'm not in the wrestling business. I'm in sports entertainment. Well, Vince, you know, Vince, I want you to take your concept of sports entertainment, shine it up real nice.
Uh-oh.
Turn that sumbitch sideways and stick it straight up your candy ass.
Push.
I hurt for this pay-per-view.
About how I feel about, like, what do you want me to put, how I feel about Vince? He's a cuck. I mean,
now how you feel about the pay-per-view as a whole, sir?
This is why I wish they did what WrestleMania 2 did. Because then I could have watched the one night, enjoyed myself, and then missed everything else. WrestleMania 2 did it smart when they were like this. We're doing a 3-night event on a Monday. That's what I enjoy. Like, and they should have done that here. I mean, it's not the first time they ever put the heavyweight title in the middle. It's happened before. It's happened plenty of times. But you, as Vince McMahon, at that time, you got to be realistic. You know who's the best wrestlers. You don't put on that. If you were going to do anything, you should have done Macho Randy as the third match before the final. Then do the Owen one that kind of like people go use the bathroom, do whatever the case is. And then do Hogan. If you are dead set on having Hogan there, you don't put Macho Flair there after Piper Brett and then be like, everything's okay.
But people would have left if you would have given them the 8-man tag all the way to the natural disasters. They would have been like, what is this?
Okay. And they sat through Shawn Michaels. They sat through Tatanka. I don't want to
hear. Wait. Did you just say they sat through the first match? Literally said they sat through Shawn Michaels. That was the first match.
Be honest. You know me. How many pay-per-views have I honestly sat here and said, fuck this?
No, I've been confused for you. And yes, you say it quite a bit. You're just like,
I will say fuck you at the national anthem.
Like, well, you mean when they sing it at the wrestling event?
Will hear it and be like, I'm done. I don't want to see this anymore. Like that's
this singer does not have the right energy.
Yeah, because the crowd and the national anthem tells you a lot. Going in here, I would have been like, you know what? This works for me. Because when you go to Mania, you know what you go to Mania for? Let's call it for what it is. You don't go to Mania to watch a match. There is one or two matches you really, really want to watch and you should watch. I'll give an example. What was it, like 35 or 34 when Braun Strowman won it with a 12-year-old?
34.
You don't go to that Mania because you're like, I'm excited to see this showcase. No, you're going to take pictures, to talk to people, to be like, hey, I'm here. Yeah, we're going. Like, that's what you're doing.
Can I say something, though? You referenced Mania 34. I would have been happy to go to that Mania to watch the matches because that's AJ and Shinsuke in what would kick off Shinsuke's I'm taking down testicles this summer.
And that was also Rollins. That was also the Rollins Balor.
That was the Rollins Balor.
No,
Miz
but what
opener.
I'm saying is Mania isn't known Oscar for
Charlotte.
As you always say, Mania isn't known for all the matches. It's like
no, it's three. Not. No, Mania is never the best card of the year. It's also never a card that has typically like half the matches are great. You're lucky if a quarter of the matches are great.
The reason why Flair and Macho should have ended it is because when Macho won the belt, there is no goddamn reason for all that pyrotechnics and not be in the middle of the fight.
Correct.
What was the point of
but
all
there
that
were pyrotechnics for Hogan winning by a DQ?
No, yeah. but the way that happened was you hear the graduation soundtrack being played and you're like, I'm ready to walk down the aisle and accept my diploma, Mr. President. And then you're going to sit here and then he's just happy and everyone's cheering and there's all this shit and then you're gonna sit here and say now next we follow up with
you kind of I tell no I agree with Push on that point because it's like you have your graduation, you have your sermon, you're like, yeah, I've done it, and then they come up and say, yeah, you still got four more classes before you actually get your diploma.
Rick Martel tuition.
I think the best way to put it is just like Sensational Sherry's dress.
Oh, God.
When you see it from a distance, it looks really good. But then when you finally got it on and stared it in the mirror, it's you have a lot of questions and regrets. So I think that's where I end my position.
I think that's a good way to end this. We all end this pay-per-view with questions and regrets.
Big time.
I just had regret.
Big time.
I had ragrats. I don't have regrets. I had ragrats.
Regrets.
The best
Snicker commercial.
All right, big guy. I think that's you.
Well, folks, this was episode 6 here of ACAD. I would like to thank Mr. Doc Savage and the Samoa Push for joining us on this episode tonight. Moneymaker, always a pleasure. And you know what time it is.
This was a blast.
Yes, it was.
I had fun with this one.
But now it's time, folks. And I got 4 words for you. Get that out of here!